Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Trade up for Tua. Maybe that's the way it is, right? Not tank for Tua anymore. Trade up for Tua. Sounds like that's what you want to do. Question mark is presented by Breaks Plus. And let me find a good one here. Let's see.
By the way, before you even ask me a question, you can thumb through those. Like, should Burrow pull a Elway?
Ooh, you just gave yourself your own question mark.
I'm serious.
That's a great question. Should,
because I know that he's an Ohio kid and Cincinnati's going to draft him, but listen, you can't change the culture of an organization if the organization doesn't want to change its own culture. So,
what makes you think that they don't want to change their culture?
Because Mike Brown runs it, and they have the smallest scouting staff, and they have the, you know, or one of the smallest
scouting staffs. The Broncos have one of the smallest scouting staffs,
right,
too.
Yeah, and they don't want to spend any money, and they never really have, and they, like, come on now, since he's owned that. Like, maybe Marvin Lewis is the greatest coach of all time for getting them to the playoffs all the time in spite of Mike Brown. You know, I look at it like if they don't truly want, like, there's a lot of people that say they want to change the culture, and then you say, well, you're going to have to spend money here and you're going to have to do this, and whoa, we don't want to do that. Like, the organization, if the organization is okay, if the organization's okay being one of the 20 teams that just continues to grow in value but never really makes an attempt, hey, listen, if the stars align and we win a championship, that's great. But we're not going to actually go out there and do what it takes, put in the requisite work to make that happen. Like, you're not going to go in there and change that culture. So you're probably, you know, your career, I mean, and maybe you will, and maybe that's a challenge to you, and maybe you think that's great. But would you consider or seriously consider pulling an Elway or pulling a Eli Manning?
Yeah, saying, you have to go back all the way to Eli to find a quarterback that said, nope, not going to do it. He didn't want to play for the Chargers, which led to the Eli Manning Philip Rivers swap. Boy. Well, I know what side you're on. You feel that these, you know, poor college kids, you know, are taken advantage of so much, and never mind the fact that they get, you know, full scholarships and all that stuff. You think they're just, you know, poor college football players. So I would think that you probably would love the idea of Joe Burrow standing up and saying, "Hell no, I won't go."
I'm conflicted about it.
Now that you've brought up the scenario, I'm kind of rooting for it just to kind of see how everybody would react, how the league would react, what would happen.
Right. Because you've got to know that there would be somebody that would give a, you know, just give a lion's, like, it would be two firsts this year and a first next year or something like that. You know there'd be somebody that would jump.
Well, wait a minute. There's a difference between a team offering a king's ransom to the Bengals and the Bengals saying, "Hey, let's do this." It's quite another for the Bengals to come out and say, "We want Joe," and Joe say, "No."
Right, but that's what's gonna, a king's ransom's gonna have to be what it takes. If Joe just says, "I'm not going," then and he's serious about it, like Eli, then you're gonna have to figure out who a trade partner is and what that scenario looks like, correct? Now, maybe you lose some of your leverage because he's saying, I won't show up to camp and I won't play. But if that's the case and you know that to be the case, I mean, wasn't that the case with the Chargers? And isn't that how the Giants, you know, got Eli?
But as you mentioned, he is an Ohio kid, so it'll be sold to him. Hey, you know, you get a chance to take a franchise that's been down and out forever, and you will be known.
Yeah.
You will be known as the guy. You think you were a hero in, you think you were a hero in the Bayou. How about all across Ohio?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He'll be writing songs about you.
He'd be public enemy one. Like, how is Elway? It's probably subsided, right? But wasn't at one time, wasn't Elway just like the hated, most hated guy in Baltimore? Because that was Baltimore back in the day, right?
Right.
Baltimore Colts before they packed up in the middle of the night.
Right.
What night? When was that?
Frank Cush. Remember
yeah,
Frank Cush?
Yeah. Was that like the Mayflower trucks?
Yeah.
That was like in the 80s sometime, right?
On the RummelSlot.com text line, 303-713-1043, it's a sad day when Colin Cowherd gets it more than you two. The Broncos have the next young Drew Brees at quarterback, and you guys actually would bring in someone to compete with him? Next thing you're going to tell us is that the Chiefs are going to trade up in the draft to get Justin Herbert to compete with Mahomes. For the starting QB next year.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, you want to talk about orange-colored glasses.
Wow. Way to hop into the hyperbole machine right there.
Right. Okay. So Drew Lock and Mahomes, identical.
No. Drew Lock, Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Identical.
Wow. Lord have mercy.
Woo.
By the way, are you... Like, Texter, are you mad that the Broncos, every time they talk about Drew Lock, there's a caveat associated with it? Well, he's got a lot to learn. He's not there yet. He needs more practice time. I mean, crying out loud.
Yeah, a lot of caveats when it comes to the Broncos. The Broncos message, not ours. The Broncos message when it comes to Drew Lock. Time now for our weekly visit with Adam Schefter, our NFL ESPN insider. He's presented by your Front Range Mercedes-Benz dealers. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great, Adam. Give us a little insight to what you heard about the hire of Pat Shurmur and what you expect from Pat Shurmur on this staff.
Well, first of all, I was a little surprised that they decided to move on from Rick Scangarello. I think you guys, the other guys, had asked me about it before. I wasn't expecting that after 1 year, but they decided that I think that they wanted more experience. They wanted somebody that I think was going to throw the football downfield a little bit more. And I think between those couple of factors, look, you know, Vic is an old school kind of guy. And I think Pat Shurmur is like an old school kind of coach. And I just think that probably was their comfort level here. That's what they felt they wanted to do going forward. And so they hired Pat Shurmur. I don't think you obviously make that move with Rick unless you know you can get Pat. There's interest in Pat. And I think Denver feels fortunate to have gotten him.
You know, I'm not saying there's a rift between Vic Fangio and John Elway, far from it, but it seems pretty clear this is Vic Fangio's move, isn't it?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, Mike. I haven't thought about it many times. I would have thought that they sit down and discuss it again. I'm sure that somebody had a preference going that direction, whether it was Vic or John, and it was Vic. What do you think?
I just find it fascinating that when the firing of Rich Scangarello came down, the Broncos release was Vic Fangio announces. And then the hiring of Pat Shurmur, Vic Fangio announces. There was no mention of John Elway whatsoever.
But it's his staff, right? It's his staff.
That hasn't stopped Elway from being involved in hiring staff members before. And firing staff members before.
That's fine. But again, it's still Vic's coaching staff. And by the way, and just with that in mind, I would think that, you know, these are moves that Vic would want to make. I mean, I don't think John's telling Vic which coach. I don't think that. I think Vic is a big boy. Vic gets to make decisions that he thinks are best. And he knows what he needs are surrounding him. And look, not like John was ignored. And John doesn't have opinions. Of course he does. But it's still Vic's staff.
It is. Hey, let me ask you real quick and take you to Cleveland right now with the hiring of Kevin Stefanski, who I think was in the running last year when they decided to go with Freddie Kitchens over over Stefanski last year. But what do you know about the whole reporting and handing game plans over to the, you know, to the owner and to the analytics department and all that? Is that something that we just don't hear of but happens all the time? Or was that something that is completely overblown? Or is that something that just feels weird to you?
Well, what happened last year was that Paul DePodesta, the Browns' chief strategist and the man that heads up the analytics department, was pushing for Kevin Stefanski to be hired. He wanted him to be the guy. And I think that there was debate within the organization about which direction they should go. And I think that the head of the Freddie Kitchens support was John Dorsey. Well, guess what? Freddie Kitchens isn't there. John Dorsey isn't there. Paul DePodesta is there, and lo and behold, Kevin Stefanski is the new head coach. Again, I think that this was something that when it became obvious that Freddie Kitchens was not working up, that they knew that it would be going back in this direction, that it was Stefanski's job to lose, and Paul DePodesta was finally able to get the guy that he wanted last year. And now, you know, Kevin Stefanski, I think he was ready last year to be a head coach. But he had this year to work with Gary Kubiak. And I think with that 1 year, he'll be that much more knowledgeable, that much more ready. And I think he's just got a really good disposition. Guy's very smart. And I think he'll be a good coach in this league. Now, here's the thing. The Browns have had good coaches come through there before, and it hasn't stopped them from getting in their way and ruining it. Okay, so while the coach could be good and qualified, they've had so many good people come through Cleveland, and there's almost nobody that has emerged from Cleveland better off than when he first got there. Nobody. So if they can leave him alone and let him do his job and let him do his job for a while and not change things, they'll have a chance. Otherwise, there'll be more Browns doing Browns things.
Adam, is there any truth to those rumors out there that whoever the Browns coach was going to be, that he and the coaches would have to turn in their game plans to the owner and analytics staff on Friday?
You know, now Jimmy Haslam said yesterday that that's not true. But what does happen is every Monday, Jimmy Haslam makes the coach sit down and go over with the game with him for 30 minutes to an hour. And he said it, you know, in a way like, doesn't every owner do that? And actually, I don't think every owner does that. I think there are certain owners that hold their coaches more accountable. But I think that probably the most effective owners get out of the way. I just can't think of Pat Bowlen going to Mike Shanahan on a Monday and having him spend an hour of his Monday breaking down the game for him and what went right and wrong. Do you think Pat ever did that to Mike?
No.
I don't.
Pat came down. Well, you were there on Mondays. Pat came down to the training room, checked on the players that were injured and said, what do I have to do and what do we need off the, you know, what do we need to do as far as signing is concerned and how, you know, how long will players be out and how serious are the injuries? That's what Pat did. And they had that, he and Mike had that conversation, but I can't imagine Pat going, hey, let's take me through the film here and show me what happened. No, I don't think that happened.
And Mondays are very busy for coaches. Mondays are very busy for anybody that works in football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just trying to think, like, if I was coaching a team, I was a coach, and my owner said, you know, I want to go over what went on here, and I want explanations about this or that. I mean, you're going to do it. It's your boss. You have to do it. That's part of the job. But I would think that hour, that there would be better uses for that hour. I know the owner comes away happy, and it's his team, but there are a lot of responsibilities that a head coach has, particularly early in the week when they're trying to break down the stones from the performance yesterday and get ready for the week ahead. And now you're just adding on another hour, which I get, you know, that's how he wants it. That's how it's going to be.
Adam, is there any chance that Roger Goodell comes down on Odell Beckham Jr. for that circus act on Monday night?
I don't think so. He didn't do anything wrong or illegal, did he? Like, did he do anything illegal?
I don't know, giving college athletes cash?
And, you know, look, it's a bad look. It's just a bad look. And it's unnecessary. you know, he looked like a human ATM there, just trying to dispense money. And he was happy, and he was celebrating. But there's just a different way to do that. And I don't think the league could discipline him for that. I mean, but you know, it's a good question. I'll ask somebody.
Hey, with Antonio Brown and the latest video that he released with the just the abusive nature of you know, his kids and the baby mama lady that was you know there, and the police officers were just, I mean, it was hard to watch. It was gut wrenching. What does the league do? I mean, do they just essentially say we're done with you, or what's the league do in regards to Antonio Brown?
Well, you know, first of all, he's not in the league right now. So, I mean, I don't mean to sound cold and callous, but it's not the league's responsibility to babysit this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I said this last week, and I'll say it again, and maybe it's really the last thing that matters in the grand scheme of things, but every time he opens his mouth or posts another post on Instagram or Twitter or whatever the heck it is, I just think he decreases the chances that anybody's going to sign him. And when you see things like that, it just makes you think, like, he's going to get some help here before he gets a job. And I don't know that he's at that point right now. You know, I don't even know that he realizes that or thinks that. And maybe we're the ones from around, like, but I think everybody in the general public views it a certain way, like, boy, this is disturbing and troubling. And I don't think he sees that or recognizes that right now. It's almost like somebody who's got some sort of addiction or substance abuse. Like, everybody around it notices it, but that person has got to come to grips with it. And it doesn't seem like he's done that at this time.
All right, Adam, good stuff. Enjoy championship weekend, and we'll have a Super Bowl matchup to look at you next week.
Yeah, it should be great. Should be great games. Look forward to it, and enjoy the conference championship today. I appreciate it.
All right, there he is, Adam Schefter, our NFL ESPN insider. He's presented by your Front Range Mercedes-Benz dealers. So, let's get back. The lukewarm or at times mixed messages that seem to be surrounding Drew Lock. The Broncos seem to have done that right from the start. Well, he's not ready. Needs more practice time. Right down to, well, you know, we have no other options right now. To, right. You know, even guys like our buddy Joel Klatt, who just admitted with us last week, yes, I am lukewarm still when it comes to Drew Lock. So we joke about it, the idea that, you know, what are they going to do at the quarterback position? Are they going to just, to me, it's obvious. You bring in a veteran mentor quarterback, your middle of June type guy, and to be the backup. This is your role. You are the backup only in case of emergency, break glass.
Right.
But it's out there, isn't it? The idea, very few people seem to be 100% convinced this is the guy, bar none.
Correct.
Why is that?
Well, because I think it goes back to, you know, the evaluation. And now, again, I think four different coordinators over 4 years in college. Now he'll be with his second coordinator in his second year in pro football. And the system with which he came out of is not conducive to playing in the NFL. Now, he played, like, the intangible stuff to me was great. Obviously, the tangible stuff is the way he throws the ball and the athleticism and all that is great, too. But I will, you know, I'll tell you just from talking to coaches and talking to players about that transition and how hard that transition is when you come out of a college system that is just a spread system. And what people don't understand, because people always look at the skill set, like your ability to throw the ball, like, oh, all right, you can spin it, whatever, right? But it really limits your knowledge and experience when it comes to reading coverage and understanding how to attack coverage, understanding In each individual coverage, where guys are, what their responsibilities are, where they have to get to, how we put that particular individual in conflict, all those different things that you don't really get out of the college game when you operate from a spread system. Because when you think about this, Mike, like there's two main things, I guess, that I'll get to. One, when you're talking about concepts, like throwing, like your layered concepts, your drag slant concepts, your branch concepts, your drive concepts, your all go special con. When you talk about all these concepts in the passing game, there are specific depths and adjustments based upon the coverages you get. And everybody has to be on the same page. And if you're not, the timing of those routes and the location of those receivers is going to be off. And what that's going to lead to is errant throws, incompletions, interceptions, and bad football. When you get into the spread system, because of the frequency that you're calling plays, with the speed and the frequency with which you're calling plays, you are essentially playing against zone coverage. And your receivers are not running precise routes. Your receivers are basically, hey, find a hole in the zone and run it. And so what does that do to you as a quarterback, Mike? It makes you a sight thrower. Wait till the guy finds the hole and then throw it to him. So it eliminates some of your accuracy because the timing is off. Like you'll be very accurate in that stuff, but it eliminates the understanding of the anticipatory aspect of football that is the most major part of pro football, and the accuracy with which you need to throw it because you're throwing it to a spot where the receiver isn't at yet because there's the anticipatory nature of it.
So that is a wonderful, detailed, well thought out analysis of the challenges that young quarterbacks face and the questions that probably, after only five games, the Broncos probably still have about Drew Lock. And you know what? If you go out and draft Justin Herbert, whoever just drafts Justin Herbert is going to have those same concerns and those same questions. Whoever drafts Tua Tagovailoa is going to have those same concerns and those same questions. So knowing that any quarterback that you get out of college these days, you're going to have those questions. Why jump down that rabbit hole with yet another quarterback? Especially when the one that you have here for the last five games showed the kind of flashes that makes you think there could be something there. Again, I will challenge anybody. If you put Drew Lock, Baker Mayfield, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, just all these Mitch Trubisky, all these quarterbacks that got drafted in the last couple of years, put them all out there. You have no idea where they were drafted. And you just get a small sample size to watch and play. There is no way you are going to look at Drew Lock and say, oh yeah, that's clearly the guy that went in the second round. No way.
Correct.
In fact, he actually would look more the part of a first rounder than some of the guys who went in the first round.
Yeah, so, but I will say this. If you looked at Mitch Trubisky the year before last, before the 2019 season, and looked at the season that he had, you would say, oh, he's trending the right direction, and he's, neck and neck with a guy like Deshaun Watson as far as productivity and everything else. And then you look at how Deshaun Watson continued his game and how Mitch Trubisky fell off.
Yep. No one, at least not me, and I don't think you, no one's saying that Drew Lock did enough in five games to convince us that he's the guy here for the next 10 years. Nobody can say that. That'd be irresponsible to say that. But what you can say is that after five games, he showed enough to continue forward with this guy, commit to this guy, give this guy every opportunity to be your guy for at least the next couple of years. There's no reason whatsoever to go after another young quarterback. None. There's also no reason whatsoever to go after a veteran quarterback.
Not to compete for a starting job,
correct.
But there is a reason to go after
absolutely.
A veteran quarterback.
Absolutely.
And that's part of my reasoning why, like, one of the main functions of this organization that I disagree with is your reluctance to do that. That John's reluctance to do that, to me, John, you know, that to me is a huge mistake. And by the way, didn't he always have? I mean, like when John, he had Kubiak, didn't he always have another guy that he could bounce things off? He had Brister. I mean, am I wrong on that or?
Then let's look at this logically. Let's not get caught up in all the, you know, wackadoos out there who are like, let's draft Tua. Let's trade up for Tua. Let's go after Tom Brady. Let's look at this realistically. Who is the guy that should come in here and be that middle of June mentor, veteran backup to Drew Lock? There's an interesting name out there. I'm curious to get people's reaction. Next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-4444. 446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.
Okay, I think most sane people out there get it. That, come on, enough with all the mixed messages, enough with, yeah, Drew Lock is this, but oh, if we could get Tua, that'd be so much better. I think most people get it, right? Just move ahead with Drew Lock. This guy showed enough that you want to continue to see more. Now the question is, who do you back him up with? And somebody on the RamosLaw.com text line said, you're going to say Eli Manning, aren't you, Mike? From 6 a.m. Rob. I said, I'm going to go, no. You know who I think would be the perfect Millership June guy to serve as Drew Lock's backup? Case Keenum.
Keenum, here's the interception.
I learned what it is to be a franchise quarterback.
Hey, they're still paying him.
Come on.
Do you have to pay me? Hey, since we're already still kind of paying you from the last contract,
right?
Can you just come here and continue to take that money?
Just kind of like bring it out of, you know, mothballs and, hey, this old contract looks great to us. What do you say? No, I mean, it makes sense from the standpoint that as long as there are no hard feelings on the way it ended, and it shouldn't be hard feelings on Keenum's part, heck, the Broncos were the only team out there who were willing to pay him. He should be eternally grateful to the Denver Broncos that he has to know by now what his lot in life is, and that is as a backup quarterback. Who better to come here? He's a good dude and somebody that I think could excel in that kind of role, prove to be a very good mentor for Drew Lock. He knows Pat Shurmur's offense. Shurmur knows him. I mean, how as a coach, you're always looking to be able to have that veteran that can help pass along your message. Keenum would be perfect in that regard. And as much as people bag on Keenum, if your quarterback goes down for a game or two, he's not the worst guy to turn to in a pinch. So for all those reasons, I think Case Keenum makes perfect sense. Bring him back.
I'm not even going to argue that. I think it's wise, Mike. I think you're smart. Mike Evans, I just said it. I think, like, as much as I bash you for, you know, doing this show with me for 4 years and not learning anything about football, I think you've learned something about football. I agree with you.
Gee, thanks.
You're welcome, buddy. You're welcome.
Oh my God.
It's like you're growing up right in front of my eyes.
Yeah, little shaver.
Look at you, little shaver. I 100% agree with you. Here's my question to you. Why the aversion to having an extra set of veteran eyes in your quarterback room for John Elway?
It worked with Bubby.
I'm just asking you why.
I don't know. I really don't. I don't. Is it just fear that the young quarterbacks aren't going to feel comfortable looking over their shoulder? Is it the money that we just can't justify paying? What's the going rate for a veteran backup quarterback? What, $4 million, $5 million? We just can't justify that. It's a waste of money. We'd rather have a young guy that we're developing. I've never understood it. In all the years covering the NFL, watching as a fan, one of the great mysteries of this league to me is how teams that have a legitimate chance to win leave themselves so thin at the backup quarterback position. It makes no sense. It's the most important position in of all sports. You've got a team that's built to win, and you leave yourself so vulnerable if anything were to happen to your guy, your main guy, for a short time. Now, yeah, I mean, you know, if the guy goes down with a season-ending injury, you know, that pretty much torpedoes your season as is. But I'm just talking about, well, the what you guys had. You guys had a team that obviously was built to win, and when John went down for a while, Bubby came in and was perfect. You wanna? How would you have felt on that team, Mark? How would you have felt if your team, Super Bowl winning team, built to win, John goes down, and you guys are forced to turn to Brandon Allen? Great song.
It would have been great, though.
You'd have been walking through the locker room.
If that was the case, and this was just playing all the time,
you'd
and
be
we're
just
like we're walking through going, everybody's in a line. Hey, guys, let's head to the training room.
Let's make a train.
And then one after the other, that would have been awesome. That would have been awesome. Yeah, no, I don't. You know, I mean, hey, man, when they decided to go with Brian Greasy, you know, Bubby Brister was there when, you know, I mean, you know me, man, I've been on this since I started doing this show with you. What, 4 years ago? I have been on this train since that time. I was the original middle-ish of June, Josh McCown, never happened. I was on the train to keep Mark Sanchez, even though he didn't play very well. Just for the veteran set of eyes, that wasn't going to cost you a couple million bucks. Nope, nope, nope. And, you know, I just look at some of those things, man, and I just think how, like, I just feel like it's short-sighted. From an organizational standpoint, I just feel like it's short-sighted. I feel like that is spending pennies to make dollars in the long run, as opposed to stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. And it will never make sense to me. And because Elway has an aversion to it, it's, you know, it probably won't happen again.
Gary and Golden. Keenum, there's the Evans we know.
There's.
Keenum, here's the interception.
If you give Vic a vet, he'll want to.
He sucks.
If you give Vic a vet, he'll want to start that vet. Where's the one? So he can mentor Drew on how to be a loser. Tired of having losers on this team. Nathan in Rocks. So, wait a minute now. We are praising and we're building up our hopes on the idea of Pat Shurmur based on what he did in Minnesota with Case Keenum, but we can't have Keenum because Keenum's a loser. Okay. I great logic there, Nathan.
Yeah.
I mean, Keenum's a loser, but hey, man, that Shurmur, woohoo, aces with me.
Wow. It was the Cleveland years that did it. The Cleveland years did it for me.
Man.
By the way,
I was looking to get a little Snidely Whiplash out of it, but I didn't think that would be the way to do it, but all right.
You know, think about it. 4-1 over our last five games with a rookie quarterback and a rookie offensive coordinator. Just not going to do it. Let's go get a veteran offensive coordinator whose team went 4-12.
Yeah, right. And Keenum's the loser. Okay. Okay.
Oh, gosh. That's just good. We
love you guys. We do.
You know,
thank you. Just thank you for being you. You know what I mean? Thank you for being you. Courtland Sutton is a Pro Bowler. Or is he? That's next. Now, these are the texts from our listeners that warm my heart. Evans, good job you getting Mark to use the great Muttley laugh.
It just struck my funny bone.
Oh, man. Every time you go full Muttley,
It just warms
my heart.
Sure.
You know, it really
I don't
does.
Know why I wouldn't. Just why wouldn't it?
Warms my heart. Apparently, somebody must be catching up to our show by listening to our, listening to it on demand.
Uh-huh.
Because we had the conversation earlier about the Browns.
Yeah.
We're bagging on the Browns.
Right.
And somebody sent in the text, stop bagging on the Brownies, guys, with their nosedive. Stink will probably be doing all their games next year.
Well, no, they're an AFC team.
I know.
They suck in the AFC, so I'm okay on this one.
Although you occasionally get some AFC teams, right?
Yeah, occasionally.
I mean, done Bronco games last couple of years, so.
Yeah, they've been bad, too.
God, that'd be great if you got a Cleveland game. Got to go hang out with Baker.
I've had a Cleveland game. Cleveland, Carolina.
That's true.
Right before the Broncos played him, and that's when I told you that Cleveland was going to beat the Broncos. I think it was a Thursday night, right?
That's right.
Because they were a better team.
That's right.
And I was right.
That was right. Last year.
Yeah.
But the Broncos beat him
2018.
This year. Yeah, Broncos beat last year. Broncos
that was 2018.
That was 2 years ago. This is 2020 now.
Yeah, well, last year to me was 2018. This was this year. Even though it's still the
2019
season. Right. It's the 2019 playoffs in 2020, if that makes sense.
Sure. Is it just me? Comes up tomorrow on our show, but somebody with an early just me says, is it just me or is Green Bay having one of the quietest playoff runs you've ever seen? It is. It's Green Bay. It's Aaron Rodgers. And yet, they went 13-3, and yet nobody's talking about them.
Relax.
Cram it up your cram hole on the floor.
It's crazy, right?
Is it?
They are.
Nobody's really talking about them as a legitimate Super Bowl team. I don't hear very many people picking them to win this week at San Francisco. The last time they played there this year, they lost 38-7.
By the way, that was
the Packers here.
That was the last game they lost, by the way.
Yeah.
You see, this is one of those interesting things too, because now I think San Francisco is so well coached, and I think Kyle Shanahan completely understands. Like, he came out and told his team that film has no relevance. And, you know, don't lie to yourself. You have to be prepared, like, all that kind of stuff. So what ends up happening to you as a football team, if you're the one that won 38 to whatever it was, you can look at that film from the standpoint of I've got a one-on-one matchup with a guy and I want to go back and look at kind of, you know, his stance and does he tip anything when he makes an inside move versus an outside move? You're looking at the individual matchup, but you're not looking at that film going, oh, look how good we were, right? You don't want to, you want to basically scrap pile that. But if you're Green Bay, you can go back and look at that and say, hey guys, look, if we do this, this and this, the things we didn't do in this game, look at it. Like, look how poorly you played, or look at what you're playing now, and then look at how we're executing this here later in the season. Like, that's beneficial. And I will tell you, you know, when we went in 1996, we went to Green Bay and got our asses handed to us. I think it was 41-6 or 41-7, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it was the end of the season. We were already locked in as the number one seed. We had a bunch of guys injured. A bunch of guys didn't play. Billy Musgrave started the game for us. I think Aaron Craver, our fullback, was the starting tailback in that game. Zim didn't play. I mean, there was a bunch of different things that went on in that game. It was, for them, you know, it was a butt whipping, but it was probably the thing that cost them the most going into the Super Bowl the next season, because they looked at that game like, oh, that's who the Broncos are. And we went out there with our JV team and got our asses beat. But we're like, are you guys kidding us? You're taking us lightly? And then the one thing that happened pregame in that game is we're sitting in the locker room and the inactives come down and they chose not to dress one of their rotational defensive linemen. And it legitimately ticked us off in the locker room. Like, are you're disrespecting our running game that much? It's hot out. We both play in cold weather cities, and you're not going to dress one of your rotational defensive linemen? Like, the unmitigated disaster. You know, I mean, it was serious. It irritated us. And,
I think the word you were looking for there was gall, but
the fact that they didn't do that, and then TD goes for 157 yards in three quarters because he missed a quarter with a migraine, right? So, you know, you do the math, Mike.
Because we're so good at math.
Right, yeah, don't do math.
Let's not do math. Hey, congratulations to Courtland Sutton. I just want to place where he is in context. I know that my man Zach, who unveiled a different laugh yesterday, by the way. Stokely got him laughing, and he unveiled a different laugh. It was a different Zach laugh. No, it wasn't that laugh. Clearly, he's been working on his laugh. It was a more mature laugh. You know what I mean? It's like he's grown a little bit, and his laugh just seemed a little bit more mature anyway. But anyway, I know he loves to talk about Courtland Sutton as a top 10 receiver, and I have a heart. You can't have it both ways. And here's what I mean. You can't say that, well, you know, he had the misfortune of playing in this offense and all the quarterbacks. And so that explains why an average game for Courtland Sutton was 4.5 catches for 69 yards. To me, what you're saying then is he is absolutely a dependent wide receiver. And if you are one of the top receivers in football, I think there's that small group of receivers that rise above the X's and O's, mm-hmm. and they aren't entirely dependent. So what is he? I mean, is he a top 10 receiver? Is he a true number one? Or is he simply a classic dependent receiver who will only be as good as the quarterback who is throwing to him? And I think right now, that's what he is. And so don't call him a top 10 receiver. Don't call him a number one receiver just yet. He hasn't earned that right.
Well, I'll give you that, but there's a lot of, I mean, you got Joe Flacco throwing to you, you got Brandon Allen throwing to you, you've got Drew Lock throwing to you, you've got an offensive line.
Here's the interception.
An O-line that was porous, and you traded away your number one receiver so you didn't have somebody on the other side.
But there are receivers in this league that have had Dreck around them at quarterback, and they've still gone out and put up the numbers. I mean, look at all the different quarterbacks DeAndre Hopkins had thrown to him before Deshaun Watson came to town. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, no, I get it. Listen, man, I'm not arguing with you. I think that he's not... He's not ready to be called, or I'm not ready to call him a number one yet, but okay. I think he's on his way.
He's trending. Okay.
Trending.
Fine. But at some point, he'll get to a point where it won't be just, well, that's his quarterback. He'll just be that number one receiver, regardless of who his quarterback is. Okay, we're done. Let's make way. Here comes Sandy and the Big O, Orlando Franklin, next.
I tell you what, one of the best shows in Denver, Colorado, coming up right now. Next, it's Sandy and the Big O. Take it easy on that cigar, Big O.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.